Eastern, which is a technical update by Kumar Dasgupta on IFRS 9.
Thank you, Michel. Good afternoon, everyone. There is a presentation in your pack, which I'll take you through. The aim of this is to give you a brief update on where we have landed finally technically after the versions and so many years of work on the full IFRS 9. What we plan to publish the end of this month, with some luck, is the complete version of IFRS 9, which includes, if I take you to the slide number 2 on the pack, classification and measurement, the single logical model that brings about the classification and measurement requirements for financial instruments under IFRS 9. Critically, the second part, which sits on the classification and measurement requirements, which drives the impairment provisions, which are the expected credit loss model, which I'll cover later. Last but not the least, the hedge accounting provisions, the improved hedge accounting requirements, which will be included in IFRS 9. We published these provisions last year, so we will incorporate all of these sections into a single standard and publish it by the end of this month. Now, taking you to slide 3, we think the unified standard is a significant improvement as compared to financial, what was there before in IAS 39. It simplifies and gives a more logical structure to classification and measurement. It addresses the concerns that were raised during the financial crisis for impairment. Last but not the least, with hedge accounting, it brings the accounting much more closer to what is being done in practice under risk management. Taking you to slide number 4, critically, when will the standard be effective? There was quite a bit of discussion and debate on this. The effective date is 2018, which gives preparers and everybody a 3-year lead time. This was clearly requested, and I'll cover this more specifically in impairment and other things. Given the changes proposed, the systems and other requirements, everybody felt that they needed a bit of a lead time before they could get into it, and that's why the board understood and took a decision to give a 3-year lead period. Also, possibly, hopefully, we can bring in a much better interaction with insurance as we go ahead. Of course, you can apply early if you so want, and some jurisdictions are looking at early application. Another small but critical point is that this issue of own credit, which got criticized heavily during the crisis, like worse your debt gets, better your P&L looks, was there, but that has been also been taken care of, and that can be brought in much earlier than 2018, even before early adoption of any other parts of the standard. Own credit can be applied at almost any time. Previous version, we have said, will get phased out because we have had quite a few versions of the standard once we publish the final standard, but we have also given preparers and users a window in case, let's say, you have got an IPO or some filing that's going on, you have 6 months where you can still do it and carry forward. Once we publish, we'd like to phase out the other versions. This is the brief introduction. With that, just quickly to take you, let me give you an overview of the classification and measurement requirements. Can I take you to slide number 6, please? First and foremost, what we did with this were limited amendments. We had published the two-category model before, and what we heard back from users was the need for a business model which encompassed both contractual cash flow collection and also some sales, because that's what happens in reality. The board took cognizance of that, and we have introduced what is called a fair value through OCI category, reflecting that business model. Other than that, what we have done is clarify the previous questions which we have got regarding SVP, what is called colloquially SVPI or principal and interest. What does it mean? What do we, how does it imply? Also giving relief on certain case for certain areas rate regulated. In slide 7, what we have tried to do is summarize why we think this approach is better. It is principle-based. It's a unified model with a logical structure, which is driven by the cash flow characteristics and the business model that you use. We have improved on the reclassification requirements, which are tight because business model doesn't change that often, but gives it flows in from the original principle is that what is driving your classification is your business model test. We have addressed our own credit concerns, and we have been able through this remove the bifurcation, and also one of the consequences is that look at a single impairment model, not the multiple ones which were there before. And the 39 tainting rules have also been eliminated. We no longer have them. So that is the area on classification and measurement. Just to emphasize limited amendments, what we have introduced is the fair value OCI category and clarified the previous questions and other, I say, understandings which were there for principal and interest and how that test works and how it will be implemented in the new standard. Now, let me bring you to slide number 9, which is impairment and one of the key facets of this response to the financial crisis. It's gone through, it's got to check it past. As you know, we have done a discussion paper and then a supplementary document, then an exposure draft. So it has been through a number of phases, got in through a lot of comments and exposures that we have gone through. And we have summarized that in slide number 9. Finally, where do we stand after going through looking at bad book, pulling out the element of credit risk for interest rates? And that's what is there in slide 10. We have gone, and with, I would must say, quite a bit of support from constituents and others who have looked at the model in great detail, on what we are calling a credit deterioration model. So initially, when you first look at an asset, on day one, if it's everything's fine, you recognize an expected loss based on 12 months. That goes as long as you do not assess there's been a significant deterioration in credit loss. If you think there's been a significant deterioration in credit loss, you move to what is called previously, similarly, bucket two, where you look at assessing then your loss, not on a 12-month basis, but on a lifetime expected loss basis. So initially, for all your book, you'd start with the normal 12-month losses that you expect. But as soon as you start seeing credit deterioration come in, that's when it moves you into the second bucket where the trigger comes in, and you look at lifetime expected losses. There is a third part, which is no different from stage two. You still keep measuring that on lifetime ECL, but you do it when you have specific evidence, and that is done for an primarily on individual asset basis. So where you have large portfolios of corporates, where you're looking at it, and that's when you move it to the third level. The subtle change that happens between stage two and stage three is that in stage two, you're still recognizing all your income and everything on the gross balance. But when you move to stage three, where you are looking at individual and you have a huge provision, you have to look at interest income on a net basis. This was, again, based on the feedback we received. That's how banks look at it, consider it, and that's for stage three. So in a nutshell, what are the key changes from the current accounting? It's forward-looking, fundamental change. It's a forward-looking model, not an incurred or IBNR model, which is there in IAS 39. And in slide 11, we have summarized what we mean by that. And it does meet the calls from G20 to look at a forward-looking model, response to the delayed recognition problems which we had during the financial crisis, because it's more expected losses. It's a single model. Therefore, we do not have to consider a separate component for equity. So a one model covers all your assets on the balance sheet, because equity, we don't need one. And obviously, this is supplemented by significant amount of disclosures on expected credit loss. As Hans mentioned, this is an area of judgment. So clearly, we have supplemented it for better users' understanding with disclosures that will be there in the financial statements. Taking you to slide number 12, there was substantial support for the model. As you can imagine, we have gone through quite a few rounds and discussions. Avoids excessive front-loading through the 12-month, and it's a pragmatic reflection of the economics. Now, we understand we did a 12-month cutoff, and so it is a pragmatic reflection based on what we have heard, and can build, very importantly, on existing credit risk models which are there. So hopefully, overall, from what we are hearing, it is a solution that should be workable. We understand that it is a significant change from existing practice because, and people are telling us that, audit firms, preparers, and others. And that's the reason where Hans mentioned we are looking at putting together the impairment transition resource group to discuss this and very quickly during the period before 2018. One of the key objectives of that group would be is that people can discuss issues and bring it to the forefront before they start putting things in systems, before judgments and other views start getting encoded in the system. So we will try and get the group running as soon as possible once we have published the standard. Okay. Last but not the least, hedge accounting. What it does is it's changed the focus and brought the emphasis of the accounting on to more aligning it with risk management. That's what risk management views it. That's how they hedge it. And what we have tried to do with this model is capture that in the financial statements. And this is covered in slide number 14. One of the key criticisms of the current 39 model was that it did not have an overarching principle. It was rule-based and therefore didn't resulted in information that was not very useful for users. And that's what we have tried to address through this model as well. It brings in primarily significant changes, maybe not too much for financial services, but for corporates, especially if you're in the commodity space. And that's what we have covered in slide 15. So if you are looking at commodities and other things, it has significantly simplified the hedge accounting requirements and better reflecting what is the current status of the instrument and the hedging practices that are there across the world in this area. And the example we have used is crude oil and jet fuel, which was one of the key complaints we kept hearing when under 39, is that you could not designate or hedge jet fuel using a crude oil derivative because of the mismatches, because the components could not be designated. Not only for this, what the new hedging does, it does away with these problems, and the hedging will be a lot more simplified in this area without a doubt, not just for oil, but for most of the other commodities and components as well. It also brings in improvements, if I can take you to slide 16, with the effectiveness testing, which has been more tailored towards what's happening with risk management rather than being prescriptive like that was in 39, where you had to do the 80 to 125. Clearly, the testing was for accounting purposes. But here, this is tailored based on risk management, how risk management views it. We have looked at incorporating what everybody talks about is the cost of hedging. When I do a hedging transaction, I have a cost. How do I incorporate that in the financial statement? So we have brought in the cost of hedging when we look at the forward points and the options when we are hedging those, and that cost of hedging has been taken care of. And lastly, disclosures. I think this is also just as critical an element of the hedging, because what we have done is brought all the disclosures in one place. So everything to do with hedge accounting previously, what one of the complaints we had was that different places users didn't understand it had to be brought together. So everything has been consolidated, and people can see what the hedge accounting and the hedging activities that is going on for corporates. So one of the things, and I think it works well with the disclosures we are hearing, is that now if somebody is doing what is called proxy hedging, they will have to disclose it, and people will see what's happening actually in reality. What are the economics of the hedges you're putting, and how is the accounting reflecting that? So overall, these are the three elements of the standard. We have published hedging that's already been placed. We have got feedback, which is positive. Impairment is the biggest bit we'll hopefully get out by the end of this month. With classification and measurement, it's a limited improvement, which is based on introducing primarily the fair value through OCI category. So these are the elements which we are putting together. It's a complete standard, single standard that we will put out by the end of the month. Taking you to slide 18, and I think we should address this, is the convergence with the FASB. The lack of convergence has been disappointing, without doubt. We did try quite a bit, but we had different starting points, different constituent needs. So we are in different positions and different places. Strong attempts were made, but we also heard that we also need to complete the process and get on and come up with this requirement, because people do need it, especially the impairment and other bits. So the headline coming down to slide number 19, where are we with publication? As Hans mentioned, we are on track. The balloting is over, which is we have got the ballot members' forms in. what we call the calling. It's not a small document, as you can imagine. It's 500 pages, so we have just started calling and typing and everything through. So we should be on target to publish this by the end of this month. We have got a detailed communication plan in place with the board members and with the major constituents, and working with Mark on this one. And Hans has already mentioned the impairment transition resource group. So call for nominations are out. That deadline ends 14th. And after that, once we've got it, we'll come to the DPOC to get the approval for that in due course. And what we are planning and hoping we can do is announce it as close as possible after we have been able to publish the standard. From our side, we are pleased to be finalizing the response, and hopefully we will get your support across the jurisdictions to pass the message through once we have published IFRS 9. And we look forward to your support on this once we publish. Thank you, and open to questions, sir.
Well, thank you for a remarkably clear and interesting presentation. Do you have any questions on this very important standard? This is a story that has lasted for how many years? Okay. Yes, Lynn.
Just one point. You said it's remarkably clear, and yes, it is for such a complicated subject. I think that in the communications, it's just so important that it's as clear as possible. And I was particularly thinking for directors, because not all directors are accountants. But we had a case in Australia recently. All directors, however, are responsible for signing off on the financial reports. And so if you can, in your communications, ensure as much as possible that it's very clear to directors, that would be very beneficial.
Thank you. No other questions. Thank you, Kumar. That was very interesting. Thank you.